This is Storage Unpacked. Subscribe at storageunpacked.com.
This is Chris Evans recording another Storage Unpacked podcast. I'm here with Martin. How are you doing, Martin?
You're not too bad. How are you doing, Chris?
Yeah, not bad. Thanks, not bad. Winter setting in? Well, not quite.
Well, it's getting that way. You're not ready for Christmas yet?
Oh, no. Far too early. No. Won't be worrying about that until the 23rd of December.
Ah, good for you.
Yeah. Okay, this week we have a guest, and we're joined again by Hal Woods from Datera. Hi, Hal. How are you doing?
Doing well, thanks.
Great. Could you just give everybody a bit of information about yourself and what the company does?
Sure. So I'm Hal Woods. I'm the Chief Technology Officer for Datera. Been in the storage industry 30 plus years now, including 16 years at Hewlett-Packard, places like Western Digital, and now Datera. My background is primarily as in various CTO roles. I've been covering software-defined storage now for as long as software-defined storage has been around. So I've done 15 different software-defined storage architectures across both file, done object, done block, data protection, data management, kind of the gamut. Yeah, so Datera is a tier one block storage for mission critical applications. So it's scale out. It's not HCI. We can talk about HCI some, but we're kind of a disaggregated solution, 100% software. We run on servers from all the leading manufacturers, and we deploy all different kinds of media. So whether it be anything from NVMe, SSD, SATA SSD, all the way down to HDDs. So quite a diverse platform.
Great. So that's what we're here to talk about today. We're going to talk about the Datera platform and understand why it was developed, where it fits in the hierarchy for everybody, and just understand why people would use a software-defined solution like Datera compared to, you know, other solutions that are in the market. So the data services platform sounds like it covers pretty much everything. So that's a bit of a wide brief. If we were comparing it to what people already know out there, is this purely software? Would people buy it as a hardware or software combo? Do you work with partners? How exactly would people sort of consume the solution?
Well, so people can consume the solution kind of in the way they're accustomed to consuming storage. So, for example, we partner closely with HPE to provide a complete appliance-like experience if that's what the customer wants. We recently announced something called Cloud Kits with HPE that gives them that appliance-like experience. If they would prefer to have a different experience, maybe they're more of a cloud model where they buy the infrastructure and then they deploy software on it. We can also deploy that way. They can buy the infrastructure separate from the software and just simply deploy us on the software that we've or on the hardware that we've qualified as part of our qualification efforts. So, kind of what the customer wants to do based on where they're at in their journey towards cloud.
Okay, now SDS and software defined, which we chatted about previous time, we very much talked about features and functionality and hardware and separation of hardware and software. So it always strikes me as a bit odd when people say, oh, it's software defined, but we do package it with hardware. The background for doing that is clearly, I guess, support, access to market, giving customers choice. Is there any other reason why you would say that people would package, you know, the hardware and software together?
Well, it's really to manage the experience of deployment. These are large scale systems, right? They can be spread across multiple racks, all those sort of things. And so it's really what level of involvement the customer wants to have in the deployment. If they want just a seamless deployment, they might deploy it kind of as an appliance where it comes prepackaged from one of our partners like HPE. If they want to have complete control over the deployment, they may buy the servers from one vendor or buy the servers from multiple vendors and then deploy our software on it and do all the networking configuration and things like that on their own.
Okay. And what does it look like? Is it something that's going to look like an HCI solution where I run my apps on the same servers? Or is it literally a scale-out storage platform which the end user then connects their servers to?
Yeah, so it's a disaggregated solution. We completely take over the servers. When we deploy our software on those servers, we kind of inventory what resources are available from a storage and CPU and memory and those sort of things, and then create clusters from those servers based on those resources that are available. The customer then would provision volumes from that and attach their applications.
Okay, so you are effectively that storage layer at that point.
Yes.
The storage data plane and control plane for whatever they want to do.
Yep. And we support, you know, all the deployment models you would expect. So whether it be things like Kubernetes, things like OpenStack, we support, you know, containers, virtual machines, bare metal. Because what we find is, given we're targeting typically large enterprises, is they have a wide variety of needs. So they're not just containers or just VMware or just bare metal. They're all of those things.
You mentioned enterprise there. Now, as we move into seeing SDS being more widely adopted, what is the enterprise view on SDS? I would say that when I was in the enterprise, we would never have looked at it simply because we wouldn't have thought that the vendor could give us the proper level of support, or we might think it's not reliable enough. But I have a feeling that that market has changed now, and enterprises users are looking for something else.
Well, absolutely. And it's really not driven by SDS per se. It's driven by their need for their mission critical applications to benefit from the same agility and velocity, right, that they're seeing in their other applications. So it's really their move towards, you know, this cloud-like model or DevOps. And finally, their mission critical applications are needing those same properties.
So it's a change. It's a change of application deployment method. It's a case of wanting to be more agile. It's possibly wanting to do more with the data. There's probably a million and one different things that go on in there, not just purely things like cost.
Absolutely. I mean, the customers, they have a data strategy, if you will. So they may be using several different applications to exploit their data. Those applications can be, you know, running on containers. They could be running on virtual machines. So it's kind of that diversity that drives their need for agility. And that's what SDS is all about, is delivering that operational agility so that the customers can react in real time to their business needs, and the storage will respond accordingly.
Great. I mean, how does that sit with you, Martin, in terms of your view and how that dynamic nature of the enterprise has changed?
It's a requirement to be more dynamic, but people talk about developers being king. They want their storage quicker. It's very important, probably more important in test environments, that you can bring things up and bring them back down again quickly. You often don't want dedicated test environments sitting there for a long period of time, just waiting for coming along to use it. So anything like SDS is important and a useful tool. Certainly over the years, we've discussed this, Chris. We've talked about SDS. And I think finally, for a lot of vendors, a lot of enterprises, we're beginning to see maturity come out of SDS houses, SDS vendors. That means it now becomes something which you would put your enterprise data. For a long time, I think there was a lot of nerves about it. But as people have used public cloud, and we all know the back end of public cloud is some form of SDS. So we now in the private cloud, we're ready to embrace. We do want all the enterprise features. And some of these things have a lot of commonality with sort of things you're going to want in DevOps environments as well. So you want a high level of observability so you can see what's going on. You can start building dashboards to allow your end users, your developers, and everybody to get a better idea about what's going on in your environment.
Okay, that's a great observation, Martin, that idea of dashboards and so on. And I'd put it back to you, Hal, and say, as you've got the data services platform deployed and implemented in somebody's environment, there will be things like the ability to visualize data, to show metrics, to give them that telemetry. It must be a really important feature.
Absolutely. So what we find is customers need to deploy more quickly than they historically have. They can't afford the very long planning cycles. And so what they tend to do is deploy quickly and then leverage the telemetry information, the analytics, the machine learning to help them guide what they should do next. So, you know, if they need to tune the IOPS for a given application, or need to tune the capacity, or maybe they need to do an additional level of replication, the telemetry information and the visualization of that gives them the information they need to make better choices.
Okay, let's quickly talk about whether you could just generally replace enterprise storage, though, because, you know, enterprise storage has got a lot of, long developed features, whether that's managing device failures, whether that's distributing data across the entire array, whether that's snapshots, whether that's, all the proactive nature of being able to replace hardware when it fails. Is it genuinely reasonable to expect that customers can see an SDS product coming in and replacing what they would have seen in the past from the traditional vendors?
So the quick answer is they're skeptical. So what they do is they run us through a very set of rigorous tests to make sure that we can handle all the sorts of failures that they typically see, you know, in classical enterprise storage. In addition, they want to also validate that they get the flexibility and agility, right, that they want from SDS. So it's a very rigorous process we see at these large enterprises in, you know, building that confidence that they can actually use SDS for their mission critical applications.
Yeah, I think from my perspective, whenever we put in new technology, we were focused on, well, I personally was always focused on failure modes. That was the one thing that I used to be a bit maniacal about, that I'd want to see what happened when I pulled a drive out or I turned a service, you know, something off, or, and we could reproduce that and see what the recovery point was. Because for me, there was no greater problem than when you actually went in and had when something failed. Somebody else might do all the functional testing and performance testing. I was really interested in that side of it. So I think you're right. Enterprises do tend to go through a very long qualification process to really make sure they fully understand that. What do you think? What's your opinion, Martin? How did you used to handle this?
Oh, so you would. So with traditional arrays, you'd be pulling disks, you'd be pulling cables, you'd be trying to break it. I think the whole discussion around failure modes and availability and reliability in SDS is interesting. I would say if you treat it in the same way as you're treating a traditional enterprise storage, you're probably doing it wrong. So a lot of the features which you think you might provide in a storage, an SDS solution, some of these things ought to be provided by the application. So as applications, in theory, start to take care of their own availability, maybe even some of their data replication, SDS doesn't necessarily have to have the same feature set as enterprise, traditional enterprise storage. It does need to be reliable. It needs to have sensible failure modes. You still want to know that when you pull a disk, you're not going to lose data. But some of the higher level enterprise features, you may not worry quite so much about.
Okay. Do you agree with that, Hal?
I do. I think what we're starting to see is some of the very esoteric modes of, for example, asynchronous replication and things like that you would see in the classical kind of big iron arrays. Customers have other ways of solving those problems, typically at the application level. They still expect, right, all of the things, you know, from a failure modes, you know, every time a node fails or a drive fails or a network connection fails, we have to recover in a way that, you know, makes sense for those customers. And that's what actually first early versions of SDS actually didn't do very well. They might deliver on some of the cool features of SDS, but they missed the, you know, is it performant? Is it available, reliable, all those sort of things. And so what we see now in software defined, and we would certainly claim in our product, right, is we got the basics right and we deliver on that promise of SDS.
Okay, so let's talk about that then. Let's go back into a bit more detail about what your platform does provide and how you've implemented that, some of that stuff, because none of this is particularly simple to do, you know, dealing with, for example, different hardware types, being able to deliver consistent performance across all of those hardware types, separating the hardware away from the requirements of the application and so on. Why don't you just dig down and we'll start talking about some of those features.
Yeah, so first is we have to think about how the customer wants to use SDS, right? So a lot of customers are moving to a DevOps model where they need to be able to provision storage for their applications on demand and programmatically. Right. And so we're 100% API driven. We still provide GUIs and things like that for customers who are not quite prepared for the all API approach. But everything is driven by the APIs. That way, the customer can instantiate, volumes instantaneously. They can light up, applications, whether it be containers or virtual machines, very, very quickly through those APIs. So the first is being API driven.
I just want to ask a very specific question there, because I remember many years ago, certain vendors actually started to say that they were API driven. And actually what they'd done is they put a wrapper around the platform and all they did was do conversions between the API calls and their management tool. And of course, what that didn't do was that didn't overcome performance problems or the locking that would go on trying to do more than one action at the same time. So when you see you're API driven, I always think, yeah, that's great, but you need to tell me you can handle, you know, hundreds of requests a minute or whatever it happens to be. You know, there needs to be some scale around that.
Absolutely. And so, for example, those APIs are connected to a control plane that is inherently distributed, scale out, highly available. So the control plane that those APIs are talking to needs to have those same properties of scalability, resiliency, all those sort of things that SDS is trying to deliver, not just the data plane, but that control plane as well. So the customer can, you know, create 100 instances of a container and then immediately attach the storage for those 100 instances. All that has to be achievable through the API.
Yeah. Okay. So I apologize. I interrupted you. I just want to make sure that was clear because I think it's a really important piece, but sorry, do carry on the rest of where you were going.
Well, I think the next thing we want to think about is, the customers are lacking the skill sets, the sufficient skill sets to be able to understand all of these needs for an application, especially given the rate of application provisioning, ephemeral versus persistent applications, those sort of things. So the next layer above that is what we call a policy-driven approach. So the customer doesn't necessarily have to say, I need 5 volumes and I need these snapshot policies and all those sort of things through the APIs. They can create policies that attach to applications, and those policies associate all of the needs, all the storage needs for those application instances with that policy. And all they need to do is say, I need to provision the storage for an application based on this policy, and it will create all of the volumes. It will create all of the data management policies, whether it be things like encryption or deduplication or snapshot policies. All of that can happen in a single call. So it's really trying to raise that level of interface.
Okay, now that's quite important and quite interesting because clearly policy is a slightly different approach to the way we may have seen things done in the past. Now, we may have been very hardware focused about the way we assign things. We may have built RAID groups or we may have built sets of devices in a certain way and then mapped the application to that. And certainly you could see that in the higher levels of, say, for example, vSphere. There's the ability to use storage policy-based management. But I think you're describing something a bit more subtle there in the sense that I can actually say, here's what my application wants, and that policy can last the lifetime of that application, irrespective of how you change the underlying hardware for that.
And even more important, so yes, absolutely. The underlying infrastructure is now decoupled from those policies. But perhaps more importantly, the customer can change their mind. They can change those policies as the application needs change. A great example of that is when an application actually creates a new feature or has some new capability to take advantage of, let's say, a new type of storage. And all you would have to do is change the policy to say, I want to take advantage of better performance. I want more performance. I want more resiliency. Simply change the policy and the storage will adapt to that. And so it's decoupling this notion of the infrastructure from the way the application is consuming storage. And we do that through these policies. And it's a very powerful notion, not just policies, but the ability to change your mind.
So policy-driven is interesting. It's something which we've looked up in the past, a full programmatic approach to changing policies. I just had wondered how, for instance, if you had an application which changed through the API, was changing policy too rapidly, how do you prevent from noise where you find an application developer or configuration isn't quite sure what they want? So they change the policy 4 or 5 times a day or even more than that. And if you've got a lot of data which is now moving around your storage device, how do you constrain that?
Well, so we have a very innovative mapping structure. So all storage systems today are virtualized. They use some sort of either map orientation or some sort of ring-based architecture. And we have this map-based approach that allows at any time to give the data plane a new set of maps to operate on. And even if, for example, a migration was still in process, all we have to do is give the data plane a new set of maps, and it will immediately switch over to that new approach in spite of whether, the old approach had completed migration or not. So it allows that level of change to happen in the customer's environment. That said, we seldom see customers kind of going at that rate of change. Rate of change is usually measured in days or weeks because what they are changing based on is the telemetry information that's gathered, provided back to the analytics engine, visualized for them, and then recommends how they might change to benefit their application. And that cycle is usually much longer than that. Does that make sense, Martin?
Sounds good. I can just see a developer or a development team manage to commit a denial of service attack on it. Almost back-end storage because they've written something incorrectly or they're not quite sure about where they want their data. So yeah, that would be my concern because I don't trust any developers anywhere.
Well, I think it really comes down to the fact that we can provide that those new maps at any time. So there's not this notion of those things backing up, right? And then at some point, you know, failing because you had too many changes queued up or something like that. So I think we handle that fairly elegantly.
And I'm guessing that there is a division of responsibility and, you know, the developer can't go changing policies. They might change the policy that applies to their data, but they couldn't necessarily go and change the policy per se.
Well, certainly it's a multi-tenant system, right? So we have, you know, the notion of tenancy and then the notion of different people within that tenancy have different privileges. And that's, you know, I think inherent in any scalable architecture, especially in the cloud-like approaches, is you have to have this notion of, you know, who gets to do what, both at a coarse grain level, meaning multi-tenant, and then within each tenant, you have different kind of privileges to make those sort of changes.
So would you support an environment which is multi-tenant enough to say different teams or different areas of the business could have effectively a logical slice of the storage? You wouldn't necessarily build out separate clusters for everybody, but you could divide that up?
Well, so we work with a number of service providers who provide platform as a service. So we have both kind of what you might call hard multi-tenancy, where we can actually sequester physical resources to tenants, or more of a softer multi-tenancy where they can have multi-tenants all exploiting the same resources, but we can set the quality of service levels via the policy to ensure that we don't have noisy neighbors and things like that.
Okay, so I think I'm starting to sort of get a visualization of what the technology looks like. One of the things I think as we start to talk about this, we can see that you're abstracting away from the hardware, you're focused much more on policy and on the features that the application wants. But what about things like management from an admin perspective? You know, as soon as you start building out something that's highly distributed, you then start to wonder how things like upgrade processes go and how you manage that, you know, the software infrastructure itself.
So, you know, obviously, when you have this notion of a DevOps environment, I like to describe DevOps as, you know, there's developers and then the operations folks. You're trying to create this seamless API-driven experience for the developers, yet the operation folks have to create and manage an infrastructure that supports that level of agility on the developer side. And that's no small feat. And so when we think about, you know, how are we enabling the operations folks, right, to create and manage these clusters over time, right, then we had to look at it through a different lens. And that lens is, you know, how do they get information? How do they know when it's the right time to make a change in the system? How do they manage things like you mentioned, right? How do I upgrade the system or how do I scale the system? So things like, you know, upgrades, right? You deploy to any node in the system a new image, and that node then ensures via a rolling upgrade process that image gets distributed. But from the administrator's point of view, it's a one-step process. And then the software, the control plane, then takes over and facilitates that upgrade process. So that's, you know, as an example.
Okay. I think there's an interesting point you raised, Hal, and that's the idea of the two different perspectives of the way that different groups look at the system. So very much the developers looking at it as a resource they can consume, whereas at the other end, the administrator is looking at a resource that they have to administer. And you're really trying to keep those two roles separate, but deliver to both of their requirements at the same time. And I would, for sake of argument, I would compare it to something or anything where we see pools of resource anywhere outside of IT, for instance, doesn't even have to be in IT, where all we're bothered about is making sure that resource is available and up and running and fully functional and all the rest of it. And at the other end, somebody just consumes it. And you could say, for instance, you know, look at your mobile phone. You're not really too worried about exactly how that's delivered and whether the network needs more capacity and things like that. All you're bothered about is, can I make the call when I want to? And is my data going to be there? And somebody else has got that worry to fix at the other end.
Absolutely. And that is no small worry. Right. And the reason I say that, and we'll go back to the SDS and software defined data center, is oftentimes we're building out this infrastructure without knowing what applications are going to run on it. Right. I mean, historically, right, what did you do? You went into locked yourself in a room for 3 or 4 days with the application owner and the infrastructure owner, and you created an architecture and a schedule and a budget and all those sort of things. And then you rolled it out. Today, right, I have an infrastructure that's up and running. A developer comes in and says, I have a new application I want to create. I just want to create it. I don't want to worry about what infrastructure is there. And the infrastructure provider, right, the ops folks, are trying to figure out how to support that environment. I want to take it to the next step, though, and that is, what that really means is the folks supporting the infrastructure need a flexible infrastructure that can grow and shrink and scale and change. Because if it's too fixed, they can't support the developers in delivering that developer velocity.
And that is really, I guess, the crux of what you've built here is something that can do exactly that. So, you can add capacity in on demand and the system will rebalance, reload across all the new devices. Can I also take stuff out and do the same thing?
Absolutely. The assumption we make is that the clusters are very long-lived. And the reason we make that assumption is because we believe that customers are going to, over time, adapt new technology and retire old technology. They're going to adopt new and deploy new applications and retire old applications. So we kind of think about it as a perpetual infrastructure, right? And by thinking about it that way, we enable this flexibility for the operational folks as well as the velocity for the developers.
I think you've raised a very good point there, that the data effectively is going to outlive the infrastructure. And that, without a doubt, should be a way we should look at it. That, as you said, over time, today everybody might be saying, it's NVMe drives, it's SCM, but something else will come along later in the future that you need to work out how you're going to put into that infrastructure. But the data still needs to outlive that and needs to be the thing that's the focus of this.
Absolutely. Right. And I mentioned earlier, we can think about applications and they are always putting in new features and new capabilities that affects their data, right? The application data. And, the infrastructure wants to enable that. And so things like, we can talk about new technologies, whether they be things like NVMe or Fabric or, Apache Pass, 3D cross-point memory. We want a single cluster to be able to take advantage of those technologies when they become available and retire old technologies when they're no longer cost effective. And that took a very deliberate architectural approach that we took here at Datera.
Right. So let's just fill some of the gaps in. Let's talk about data protection and how somebody might deploy this across, say, multi-sites and, how you manage things like performance, because these are, I guess, very typical things that enterprise storage solutions would have. And people may wonder how exactly you're implementing those sort of features too.
Yeah, so we probably want to start with a basics of a cluster and how it's formed and kind of our way we protect data.
That'd be good.
So we're a replication-based approach. Customer can specify a replication factor anywhere from 1 to 5. And the lower numbers are usually for environments where the application is providing much of the resiliency. Greater numbers are usually implemented when we want site-level distribution, meaning we want multi-site approaches and we want data protection, fault domains that span sites. So we provide that level of flexibility per volume, and then individual applications, which might have multiple volumes, right? That might have some persistent volumes, might have some ephemeral volumes. All of those are supported within the system. We support all the features you would expect from a data management point of view, right? So things like deduplication, compression, encryption. But we have some unique capability there in the way we deploy our software and divide up our software. An example of that would be, I might have a node in our cluster that is primarily non-volatile memory. Let's say it has a bunch of Apache Pass in it. Whereas I might have another one that might have hard disk drives in it. It might make very much sense to have different compression algorithms or encryption algorithms based on what type of infrastructure I'm running on. And so the way we've architected our software allows us to have specialized capabilities on a per node basis.
Right.
And so that delivers better cost or better performance, whatever attributes make sense according to the policies associated with the applications.
Okay. And how does the customer determine what they're going to do in that instance? Because say a customer comes to you and says, right, we want to build a cluster out and we've got a rough idea of our requirements. How would you help them get to that point of understanding what's the best technology for them to deploy in that instance?
Well, so certainly we would look at things like performance and things like resiliency, how much, I hate to use the word nines anymore, how many nines they need, because we believe in continuous availability. At the same time, what are their requirements? Is this one of their most mission critical applications? And is the particular type of data their mission critical data? And if so, right, we want to map that to the appropriate physical infrastructure. That said, there's a lot of experience, and I've been doing this a long time. Customers don't know the answer to a lot of those questions, right? When you say, how fast is your data going to grow over the next 2 years? Or, what sort of infrastructure do you need? They're really looking to the providers of both the software and the hardware, right, to help them answer those questions. But the bottom line is they don't know because their environment is dynamic. And so we built this system with the notion of the customer is going to deploy with the best information they have at deployment, and then let the system help tell you via the telemetry and the analytics, right, how the system is performing. And then if need be, via the policies, you simply make a change to the policy to get the better and better attributes over time.
That personally, I think, is one of the features that I think is probably the most interesting one. So I'll give an example. In my day job, when I was an end user and using technology and deploying it, we would find it very difficult to scale both for both performance and capacity. Obviously, imagine X as one axis and Y as the other. So what we would do is we would build in chunks that allowed us either to add capacity or increase performance through things like adding more controllers or backend directors. That was a very static way of doing things, but ultimately we knew that we would need to grow across those two axes because we'd never really know what the profile mix of the data was on the platform. Now, from your perspective, you've got like the evolution of that, if you like, where you've actually got the telemetry and the metrics that show me as I look at my platform, here's what I'm going to need and here's what I could put in to replace that. And I guess it must be possible also to model, if I took stuff out, what would I need in order to replace what comes out of the architecture?
Right. And so there's that telemetry information that helps the customer know where they might benefit from new technology or scaling the system, redistributing data. But more important than that, the system allows you to change the policy and it will adapt. And that's really the difference between what I'll call a veneer of management over a classical architecture and an architecture built for change. And that's really how I think we distinguish ourselves, is in that ability to adapt as the customer gets smarter, as the customer deploys new applications, as they get better information via our telemetry, they can, you know, make a change to the system, and the system was built for making those changes.
Yeah, so you add new hardware in, the system consumes it, and you're completely separating and detaching the physical attributes of the hardware away from what the application wants. All you're bothered about is whether the hardware you've given the system is sufficient to deliver what the applications are requiring by policy.
Yeah, and so I'll talk through an example we had with an actual customer, where that customer deployed hybrid nodes, where it's a mix of HDDs and SSDs, and their data set actually didn't fit within the SSDs within the hybrid node, so their read performance ended up going to the hard drives quite often. Right. And so they wanted better read performance, and they had the policy set that way. All they had to do was add a single node of NVMe SSDs. The system automatically recognized the new infrastructure and looked at the policy and said, we're automatically going to redistribute the data, so a copy of that data is on the NVMe nodes. And the performance went from milliseconds to microseconds for those reads without them having to change anything. The policies were already set. The problem was the infrastructure couldn't deliver to those policies. The telemetry information told them that. They added one node, the system automatically redistributed the data, and their application just got faster.
Okay, and let's face it, if you're building an environment for scale, if you're building, say, for a service provider or some sort of model like that, that's exactly what you want to be able to do. You don't want to be sitting there and thinking, we've got to build a new infrastructure or redesign or start from scratch. You literally just want to fix that problem as it is there and then with some hardware and then move on.
And yeah, and as I talked about, we only added one node to an existing cluster, right? Most other systems, even software-defined systems, you would have had to create a new cluster and migrate the data to that new cluster, which perhaps might even be a disruptive event. And so we have the ability to add just enough of the right technology at the right time, right? And let the policies take over.
Yeah, that's quite, I think at that level of granularity, without a doubt, that's a very difficult thing to achieve.
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey, right? We've been around since 2014. And so the company's worked on that architecture, you know, very deliberately, you know, and then you didn't call it, DevOps. It was basically the founders recognized that a new way of creating and managing storage was necessary for this emerging DevOps world.
So Hal, what about licensing? You know, from what we've talked about so far, this is an ongoing perpetual platform that we expect to live forever. How do you license the solution to the end user? Is it based on capacity? Is it based on node count or the amount of storage being managed? What options does the customer have?
Well, what we tend to find is customers are coming from one of two directions. They're coming from a historical array model where they're used to what we would call a perpetual license associated with the physical infrastructure. So we support that model if that's the way the customer is accustomed to budgeting and buying their storage. Or we find customers who are maybe repatriating an application from the cloud and they're used to a consumption-based model. And so we also provide that option of providing it based on actual consumption.
So there's choices available for you for the way you want to do that.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. Let's talk a bit about futures and where things are headed. And maybe this is a good opportunity to talk about some examples as well. But where do you see that, the technology is going in terms of development from where we are now? What is missing? What else do you really feel is going to be added in the next 18, 24 months?
So there's a number of things, right? So we have what I call the infrastructure treadmill, right? This is where there's new types of media coming out, new servers, new networking technologies with things like NVMe over Fabric. There's always those investments that we want to make sure that we're ready with the technology when the customer's ready to adopt the technology. So there's always that. We're continuing to make improvements in our artificial intelligence and machine learning approaches so that when the customer is deploying an application, we can provide them that feedback in terms of how well the application is performing according to the policies. In terms of features and functionality, we've got things like a snapshot to object. So one of the things that we find is customers are using snapshots as a form of data protection. And if we can bundle those into something like an S3 bucket and then put that on either the public cloud or the private cloud, that gives customers some flexibility in how they are protecting their data. There's always a set of features and functionality, whether it be things like improvements in our replication approach, scalability, scaling to larger and larger clusters as the technology gets more widely adopted. All of those things are on our roadmap. One thing I would highlight is the basics of the technology in terms of scalability, resiliency, availability are already very solid. And so, while we continue to invest in those as necessary, the architecture is really bulletproof.
In terms of how the customer would get that, will this just appear as an update? So for instance, say for sake of argument, you were supporting a new hardware product. We could pick NVMe, but I don't want to use that as an example. But say there was a new media type or something like that, you would just upgrade and then you would know that was now available for you to actually consume next time around on a hardware refresh?
Absolutely. And as we talked about a little earlier, they adopt that new hardware and they don't have to deploy an entire cluster. They could deploy a single node of that new hardware. And then the policies would recognize that and figure out according to the policy for a given application, whether it benefited from that new infrastructure. And if it did, it would automatically adjust, right? And so that goes back to that power of that policy driven, built for change.
Yeah, I think that's quite an interesting thing to think about because you're not talking about saying, well, let's do that forklift upgrade, or even let's, put in a new solution and migrate to it like you have to in some environments. You're talking about the fact that you can just add it to an existing cluster and use it. And then at some point you work out what is the older technology that's no longer viable. You take it out, which is a very different approach to the way we've done storage refreshes in the past.
Yeah, very much so, right? It used to be we would amortize the storage solution over some period of time and plan for a new one, along with a probably a very complex data migration, right? And so, we have customers that are buying our solution and replacing four or five different products, legacy storage products, with our solution because of that flexibility and the ability to use different types of media with different sorts of policies. They're able to kind of do wholesale replacements of their existing infrastructure when that makes sense.
And do you see people saying it changed their business model? Because one of the most obvious things there is you talked about that idea of replacing technology and the way we used to do it, where we'd build and design and deploy and migrate on. And maybe the purchasing structure was based around a new business or a new project coming on and buying that software, that storage. So clearly we must have influenced the way that people look at the way they charge for the technology, because now it's a license fee, it's occasional replacement of hardware. It must be very different for customers.
Well, we see a wide variety. We see customers who still think about it like appliances or classical storage. We see customers who say, I want to separate the contract, purchasing contract out. I want to buy the storage from the servers from one vendor. I want to buy the licensed software from another vendor. Their software-defined networking is separate from their actual physical switches, right? Some customers are getting very sophisticated in how they purchase their infrastructure and their software.
So in terms of growth and development of the company, you know, what are you seeing out there? How are you growing? I guess what size of customers are you requiring, and how is that changing over time?
So things are going very well. We've got a number of Fortune 500 companies, even from Fortune 10 companies that are now deploying us into production, which is a very exciting time for the software-defined storage industry. As our CEO, Guy Churchward, likes to say, it's like someone flipped a switch in the last 6 months. Our billings are up quarter over quarter from Q2 over 500%. And we've so far with our partner HPE, we've exceeded our forecast for capacity shipments by over 3x. So it's been going very well.
Fantastic. Are you seeing bigger customers? Are you seeing multi-petabyte deployments? Do you see that side of it increasing? Or is it generally that you're just seeing more customers being happy to adopt?
So we're seeing both some very large customers looking at us to deploy petabytes and petabytes, but of course they're going to take a conservative approach. So typically they start with, you know, around a petabyte, maybe two. They're going to deploy that and make sure it operates as expected. But they talk about deployments in the tens or hundreds of petabytes as kind of where they want to take us. So that's, you know, as you might expect, that's exciting times.
Absolutely. I mean, those are big numbers. And, you know, if you're going to commit to doing that on a single platform, you're going to have to be fairly confident in the technology. And without a doubt, you would put that in and try it. But it's interesting that you're saying that there's been that sort of like that switch flipped and people are seeing SDS as being something they want to go to now. Maybe that's, you know, that evolution of SDS that's got us to that particular point.
And it's not just SDS, right? We see software-defined networking. I'll even argue that things like containers are an example of software-defined compute, right? So we're really seeing kind of that momentum building, and we're just thrilled to see the software-defined storage kind of finally taking off.
Yeah, so maybe it's the whole software-defined data center.
Yep, absolutely.
All that sounds great. If customers want to go and find out more, where should we point them to? Your website, for example, where should people look?
So website is dataera.io, so that you can go to and you can find that calendar of events. We've recently published some blogs to help customers navigate the conversation around converged versus disaggregated, so there may be some help there.
Perfect. What I'll do is I'll put in the show notes links to all of that, and we'll make sure that people can go and find that information, including some of the stuff you just mentioned, like the blogs directly, so that they don't have to go looking for it specifically. Okay, well, Hal, that was great. Thanks very much for your time. It's been really interesting to learn a lot more about the technology and understand where it fits. I very much particularly like digging in and understanding the engineering you've done in order to separate the hardware and the software. I think that's really important going forward. And that whole software-defined data center aspect of it, I think, is going to be where people are definitely going to head. So thanks for your time, and look forward to catching up with you in the future.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked, or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.